That was the whole.
The whole stack. Yeah.
We didn't realize we thought it was great for this. I don't think how to watch. I said, no, I'm just going to look over. So I'm going to look over. Copy my DM. Copy my DM. Okay, good. This one's all she knows. Oh, okay. We have taken it over, but it really is. Well, the water looks like it's there.
Okay, where are we? We're over here. Actually, this year is about Shari B'tochen, but as we strengthen B'tochen, we went to talk about the challenges we have and where it comes from. And over here in chapter 5, on page it's on page 5 also. It starts talking about the Yetzer. So what do we know about the Yetzer? The first thing we know about the Yetzer is that it's very much intertwined into our nefesh, and it hides itself, doesn't present itself as Yetzer. It comes up for different arguments. And until it becomes part of the way you're thinking, and that's how it gets to a person. That's how it gets to a person by throwing doubt into the person's. But he knows it to be clear becomes doubtful. So look for so for example, a person's having bitachon Hashem. This is very common, and it feels that Baruch Hashem is going well, and then something happens, and it starts feeling not sure doubts about the bitachon and the questions, and he thinks that there's obviously something. He thinks that something wrong. Why? Or in education, you have the same thing. You have bachum that they're having a good year, two, three years, or they have a hard year, they have a few good years, and they think they overcame the problems, and suddenly the problems resurface, and they get disappointed, they get lost, and they feel that whatever they're doing is not it's not really them, and they start questioning. When we understand ourselves that way, we have a Yetzer Tovei Sahara. Sahara comes up with ideas on how to undermine that we know is clear. So if you knew that, then you would realize the questions are coming up are simply coming from the Sahara. And the Yetzer Hara is the one has to be overcome with answers to his questions. It sounds simple, right? What makes it complicated is two things. First of all, you have to have the answers. So you have to, and that's what we try. Besides,
I saw this week what you said that he comes at a trend because my daughter wanted to trim her music.
What?
My daughter wanted to trim her music. It's a very hard thing for a young girl. Every half inch is like $1 million. And she said, "I'm doing it for Hashem. I'm doing it for Hashem." And I kept saying, anyway, it suits you better. You have a small face. It's in style. Like, and then I'm like, no, I'm the Yetzer Hara.
Because it's in style. The next time it's not in style, you had a problem. It's good.
That's really interesting.
No,
it
suits me. I'm not doing it. Suits me. I'm doing it because of it. This is what
I think. Yeah. Okay. So same thing with. So why is this? So on the. I don't know if. On a practical, on Pashat, an important note, we said about last week. So why does Hashem give us Yetzer Hara? Why if Hashem could give us that Yetzer Hara? Wouldn't life be a lot nicer? No. So I want to say besides the intricate comes the intricate ways it comes. The real problem is regilusin, as a habits. What happens really? People develop habits of how they act and how they think and how they do what seems to work for them doesn't work for them. And it's really the habit that a person has a problem breaking. It's not the actual. If a person was started with a clean slate, it would be a lot of struggles he has would not be a problem. The reason why he has most of the time or many times is just simply because he has a habit of doing things a certain way. So the nefesh habam is sort of ingrained in the habit of the thing, not in the logic of the thing, and not in the goodness of the thing.
It's just what you do.
This is how I do it. Okay, so why does Hashem do what we said last week? Why Hashem does this? Because this is the difference between a tzaddik and the rasha. The difference between a tzaddik and the rasha is a tzaddik does not have Yetzer Hara, a tzaddik does mitzvahs. A tzaddik does mitzvahs because, I think, Chazi. A tzaddik does mitzvahs because it's like a sweet food. Always it does mitzvahs, it goes higher and higher Kedusha. Well, Tshuva is the one that takes darkness and turns into light. And that's really what's going on. The Yetzer Hara is darkness. And by overcoming the Yetzer Hara, what you're doing is you're taking the Yetzer Hara, you're turning darkness into light. So if you want to know the purpose behind the whole thing, it is a big purpose going on. It's not like Stam Levi wants a person to struggle and make it hard for him. That's actually the way. The same way you can understand that Hashem wants to take a physical world and bring Kedusha into the physical world by building shuls and schools and Jewish homes. And there should be a Jewish body that's doing mitzvahs. Hashem wants us to elevate the Gashmis. On a deeper note, by fighting the Yetzer Hara, we're actually turning darkness into light. So this is so. The reason, what's the purpose of going through all this discussion? This gives a little bit of motivation when a person is going through the difficulties of fighting the Yetzer Hara, and he realizes this is the purpose of why he's created. And there will be a time, Mitzvah Mashiach comes, and And that's 120 years when that's the time to enjoy. They'll have a lot more to enjoy because he's doing what Hashem wants him to do, and he has all that schar. Okay, so then he said the first attack that the heart does on a person is to make him think he doesn't have a neshama, and that we learn. So now we're going through the nine different challenges that Yetzer Hara does, and to find them and apply them. So we talked about the first thing is that a person doesn't have a neshama. God, I had a call this week from a father who was very excited. Yeah, and he used this idea to tell his son that he has a neshama and the car. And he had a very, very positive outcome with connection with the son. A Jewish child understands more than you understand that they have a neshama. He just came from there. And talk to him like a year, you'll see a very, very... because that's the reason why the son attacks it first. Second thing is what I want to talk about.
Do they even have a soul?
They have a form of life, but not a chelik al-ka, not a godly life. It's called a soul, because a soul is a word for life. To have nefesh bamis, to have nefesh chiyud, the same way an animal has life, a goy has life, but it's comes from klippus. It doesn't have the neshama like we have. It's more than animal. Some way worse than animal.
I'm trying to see myself. Mm-hmm. By page 8 now.
Yeah. The chassidim exists. I'm very upset. Yes, it ceases to exist. So the diak by a ger, the diak is gershen is gaya. If you look at the Gemara, it doesn't say goshen is gaya. Gershen is gaya means somebody who had a nesham before, but it was very hidden. Such a person becomes a ger. Gershen is gaya. In any event, by the gerus process, doing the mitzvah of gerus, the same way by a neshama comes into a child who is born from a Jewish mother, you do the process of gerus that comes into the neshama comes into that person. Becomes and he has that neshama, so now he has responsibility. This is why a yid was always happy doing mitzvah, and a yid is never happy and doesn't avoid it. Because when a person doesn't, but a yid doesn't avoid it, he's actually being pegay, he's actually doing something which is very much against his neshama. And it's like eating food that's not good for you. So suddenly you don't feel good, or eating poison, or eating even if it tastes good, just has those ingredients in there that actually hurt the body, you won't feel good. So same thing, a yid can never really feel good. I mean, of course, in the neshama that he has. So this actually comes into a lot of ways. A lot of times people just don't feel right, and they think they have to have a vacation, they have to have a new house, and they have to have... I share with you the story that there was a guy in Brighton Beach. He had this thing. He was labeled a high adrenaline junkie. You remember that? His friends knew him as a high adrenaline junkie. Every time he had a free day, vacation, he went to do high adrenaline sports. He would jump out of airplanes. He would bungee jumping. He would go. And then he started becoming a little bit shuva, and he started doing mitzvahs. And as he did that, he suddenly waned away from it. He stopped doing it. And his friend that I met told me, it met him in the first school of prison actually, and he told me that he couldn't understand why this is happening. But after learning and he realized he has an neshama, he understood it very well, because this guy was in the neshama, had an neshama. He means he had an inner hunger for mitzvahs that he wasn't satisfying it. So he thought if he obviously on his physical side like go doing activity, those high adrenal activities covered over the emptiness that he had. And then as he started doing mitzvahs, as he was filling in the vacancy that was being by his neshama, he didn't have to do it anymore. His physical thing didn't need it.
On a little scale, we have the same right all the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm being it.
But even if you're doing this, and even if you find satisfaction from them, you still sometimes want like a dopamine hit that's outside of cognition.
No, you have.
Not talking about that part. First, establish that a Yiddish person cannot really have a good life if he doesn't do tenemis. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Taking dopamine, I know. But, yeah.
I have a question. I don't know if it's so related to this, but the dar that was in the Midbar, they were actually the ones that chose to leave the Chayim. They were in a place that was completely in a Nefesh Bahamas, and they elevated themselves to 49 days. They got to the highest level. And we now, so many generations later, can't even go near that level, right? We can't imagine that level. We want to be in that level. And they still sin.
Yeah.
So I feel like if they sin,
I got it. So you got a license. Okay.
I don't know. Like we're.
It's not true because the Gemara.
We're just all a bunch of behemoths all the time. Okay.
No. So that's again. So this type of thing that is presenting with.
My head is brilliant.
No, this argument. First of all, the Gemara does say that that generation, they really want to shach the whole thing, and the Hashem wants to prove what they mean from Truvis. How and why a tzaddik can come to sin is a different conversation. I don't think a smaller guy can say if he can do that, how can I do it? Because nobody's given something that they can't handle. Everybody. This is a fundamental thing. Because you have a neshama, that's what we're talking about. Because you have a neshama, it means we do have the koyach. Neshama has the koyach to come into a physical existence and, with the help of Hashem, elevate the existence. He has to make that choice, though. He has to realize that the physical existence is here today, gone tomorrow, and the real existence is neshama. And when he wants to, Hashem will help him do it. That's the fact. It's hard to know that also. It's not surprised to come to a person and say, well, it's too hard. If he can do it, how can you do it? But it's all part of that's what we're talking about now.
Okay.
Okay. So the fundamental thing like this, Hashem, Amunah, Hashem creates us. Hashem creates us for a purpose. And since we learned this in Shabbat, the most important thing for an Eved Hashem is to trust his master to give him what he needs to be able to fulfill a service. It doesn't make sense. Hashem should send me into the world, give me a job, and then not give me the ability to do it. That would be ridiculous. Elomai, Hashem, but you're saying David wants this struggle. David wants this, the overcoming the darkness. He wants the person to overcome the darkness. He wants the person to do it. David can do it on his own. David can create a world that's holy. He does. The Galatians, the world's holy. But David wants to create a world that's not holy. And he wants the world to come to the holiness. He wants the world to recognize holiness. So this is, and that's a, yeah, yes, yes.
It took 50 years, so we're still on the way.
You see, there you go. You have 120 years. You have 120 years. You have 120 years, but you have to be on the right track. It goes step by step by step by step. So the first thing you have to know is you have a neshama. That's the Yitzhar tries to come and tries to. Then today I want to talk about, and I'm going to open the conversation, and I'm going to ask the first time in the app on page 8. When the Yitzhar abandons hope of casting doubt in your mind of this about neshama, he will attempt to cast doubt on the existence of the blessed creator. He will tell you that the world is neither new nor created. Now, I want to point...
Number 2, no Hashem.
So the person is looking at a world, and they try to convince the person that this is the world that exists. And the person thinks this always existed. And that's the message the Yitzhar wants to tell the person. And we have to be like little Avraham Avinu. We have to say Avraham Avinu found Hashem on his own. So the world doesn't. The world hides Hashem, but the world doesn't hide Hashem to a point where it's impossible to find him. The world does not hide Hashem to a point where it's impossible to find him, because the world, the very existence of the world comes from Hashem, from the Hashem. So, but the Eitzar will try to tell a person that the world is neither new and therefore it was never different from what it's now, and nor will it be indifferent. And there's no existence which is more fitting to be a creator than a created being. He's arguing the whole concept of creator. No one is under duty to serve anything, since everything is ancient and has existed internally. In different forms or fashions, this is the second argument that comes and tries to say to you that now the Eid has to answer back and understand that yes, there is a creator. So I want to just talk about some very fundamental. It sounds like we're in elementary school right now, but sometimes a good thing to go back to elementary. Let's go to elementary school for a second. What did our Rebbe teach us about Hashem? Of course, he told us that we all came out of Mitzrayim, Hashem revealed us with big miracles. But he also told us about the story of Avraham Avinu. How did Avraham Avinu find Eved? It's a medrash. And he says, he finishes off over here, what's the answer? Look what he writes. And then I'll expound it. And if anybody has a question, I'm inviting any questions on this because it's very fundamental. If he comes with his claim, return to your understanding, to your seichel, and he will show you the fallacy of this claim from the discussion of the first gate of his book. So this is a problem of the levels. This is the fifth gate. He says, if you look at my first gate, you'll find all the answers to this question and prove to you that this world has a creator who created it from nothing. So on a very, very fundamental level, that happens to be a very in-depth, and not complicated, very in-depth learning, which I'm not going to try to do over here. But I want to just pick a few points from there. So if you're bothered by it, or your child is bothered by it, or something fundamental that we learned mamash in elementary, the elementary I went to, I don't really talk about it today either. So that's why I gave you a supplement over here, and I'd like to read the supplement. And the supplement happens to be the end of two chapters. What does he say? What does he say in the beginning of the chapters? He says like this. He says, the one you don't want to learn.
I don't have to learn the piece of wine.
If you learn that shy, you become a case. Yeah, if you listen to therapists, you overcome applicators. If you listen to podcasts and applicators, the Wall Street Journal applicators, this would be amazing. Sounds a little silly, no?
It's in the paper.
A therapist won't, yeah. I'm just saying.
That's true.
You need a teacher. Okay, here. So I said it sarcastically. Okay. So obviously it's very important to learn. I just want to bring up three. He brings up three points, and I'm not going to get into. I'm not going to go in depth with it, but I just want to show you there's a foundation there, and this is the culmination of the whole thing. He says like this. He says if you know just three things, and you're taught how to use it, which he teaches how to use it, you'll come to the realization yourself. Like if Avraham walked out of the mire and he saw a world. So, but what did he see? He doesn't see trees. And he wasn't focused on the world itself. He was focused on the sun moving and then the moon moving, and it was focused on the intricacy of how everything was working all together. And then he says he realizes there must be a owner to this palace. And then much of the measures gives, like a person traveling passes a big palace and he sees a very, very organized building. And he says there must be an owner. Nothing organized has happened by itself. There must be an owner here. So he recognized that there must be an owner. And at that point, Hashem revealed himself and said, that's me. That's the medrash. Now, in this little medrash, on this big medrash, is a tremendous lesson. First of all, Avraham Avinu then was 3 years old. Granted, he's Avraham Avinu. But if he's somebody beyond human, they wouldn't tell the story. The reason we're told about it is because Avraham Avinu is our father, and we are able to do the same thing he did. And if we can't, because he did, then we can also. Like he had Mesiras Nefesh with the Yitzchak Avinu, we can have Mesiras Nefesh later because he had Mesiras Nefesh. So the fact that he did it means we're able to do the same thing. What does it mean? We can look at the world, and we can see just simply how the world's created and realize there is a creator. What did he see? The first thing he saw order. He saw how first things are moving and nothing moves by itself. And he saw a world that's a composite. He saw a world that's made up of many parts and it's all working together. From the big picture down to the small picture. He sees a world when there's a sun, the moon, there's a key on top, like a ceiling. And he sees the vegetation, then the animals, the people. He saw something that each one helps each other. He must be somebody who put this, a composite must be put together. So here's the three points he says. First of all, he says that the rule is, without getting into the explanation of it, the rule is a thing cannot make itself. Nothing can make itself. Because if it made itself, it had to be here before it made itself, so that would be silly. Something that's created can't make itself. Second thing is, if it has an end, it has to have a beginning. And the third thing is that if you see something that's made up of parts, somebody has to put it together because it can't be put together by itself. And that's what Avraham Avinu saw. Thank you for saying. I'm moving. I want to hear questions, kids. Yes, and let's get the answers. That's why when you say you talk about Hashem, you talk about a Kadma, you talk about something who was always here, and that's exactly, it must be a being that is not a created being, and that's a creator. So anything you find, so what's the point? Anything you find that is a created thing because it has limits and has things, they know it's not. They move on. Move another book.
I don't know. It's crazy.
Sorry. That's exactly the point. So you realize that if it has anything created has a beginning, so you're talking about a creator. We can never see Hashem because Hashem is beyond limits. We can never understand Hashem because Hashem is beyond our understanding, but we can come to the realization that Hashem has to exist and the creation that it's not. So the first attack, and this is something which Hashem will reveal himself. If you want to move over, if in a discussion with your child, you want to move over to the fact that Hashem did reveal himself to Eden. We're talking about Mitzrayim through miracles, through Nisim, and through showing himself, he's taking care of them. and it wasn't, and there wasn't only the one person. It was the whole Klal Yisrael. It was mentioned in previous classes. That's that the Eibush there. Yiddishkeit is not something which one person saw, it's which all the Klal Yisrael witnessed, experienced. Actually, the word is experience. It's a Yiddishkeit is a religion of experience. We first experienced it. We experienced being slaves. We experienced going out of the time. We experienced all the miracles happening with David. We experienced being a Mahar Sinai. And then that it's like we know electricity exists. It's a good marshal. You should keep it in your head. Electricity exists. Electricity exists. High electricity exists. Nobody saw electricity. We know what electricity does. We know that if we put these things together and there's, so we give it names, electrons and protons and all these different names that are given. But the actual energy is not something you see. You just know that if you put two wires together and you put a bulb, except the lights up, so you know it exists. You know it exists with such certainty that you put the light, your life on the line. You'll get into a plane because you know electricity exists and the plane will fly. You go into a car. If you had any doubt that electricity exists, what happens if suddenly that you're relying on is not there, you'll drop out of the sky. So we don't have to see something necessarily to know it exists. But we see what it does, then we know it exists. So we're looking at the world. All we're trying to do here now is come to a realization that has to be created. Now, there are those philosophers, the first one, who argued this argument, which is being argued today, by the way, through philosophy and through therapy, that the world always existed, that the world doesn't have a creator. Now, they can't say that to the religious community, so they let us get away with that. But in their mind, all their way of thinking comes from a Freudian thing of that there was that people come from monkeys, that there's evolution here, that the thing always existed. So the first attack the Yetzer has is that there's no Eibush, so it does exist. Eibush, the world, where the world come from, it always existed. That's the philosophy they go by. And this is something which you have to be able to answer to yourself, at least in a very basic way. And I'll read to you the last few paragraphs of Shara Yichud and then move on. He says like this. There are some people who claim that the world came into being by chance without a creator. This is at the end of all of his explanation. This is what he writes. This is like the last page of a sikkum. Yeah? Let me read this and we'll go to it. There are some people who claim that the world came into being by chance without a creator, who created it and without a maker who formed it. It's amazing to me how a rational, healthy human being could entertain such a notion. If such a person heard someone else saying that the same thing about a water wheel, I guess in those days had water wheels that irrigated for the drinking, like we had a sink. Yeah, which turns to irrigate a part of a field of a garden, saying that it came to be without a craftsman who designed it and toiled to assemble it and placed it each part for a useful purpose. So water wheel, a simple wheel, but I guess brought the water up. It had to be a wheel, it had to be a pipe over there, whatever was there, and it had to be put in certain. So a simple water wheel, if somebody said it happened by itself, the hero would be greatly amazed on him, consider him a complete fool, and be swift to call him a liar and reject his words. And since he would reject such a notion for a small portion of the earth, how could he permit himself to entertain such a notion for the entire universe, which encompasses the earth and everything in it, and which exhibits a wisdom that no rational human intellect is capable of fathoming, and which is prepared for the benefit of the whole earth and everything on it? So you see, Hashem prepared a whole beautiful world for us. He gave us everything we need in this world. He gave us food and all types of food and delicious food. How could one claim that it came without a purposeful intent? Is a very big word. Without a purpose and thought of a capable wise being. It is evident to us, and the story that I remember as a child getting hearing in class, and obviously learning this comes to life. There was a king with a great tzaddik over there. And they were discussing whether the world has a creator or not. And the king was stubbornly arguing that there was no creator and the world happened by itself. And then he had to leave for a moment, and he left the rabbi sitting there by his desk. And the rabbi was able to draw a picture. So he took quickly the king had an inkwell on his desk. So he took his pen and a piece of parchment or paper, whatever was there, and he made a nice little picture. And then he knocked over the inkwell onto the paper. So the king comes back, he sees a nice picture with the inkwell dumped over. He says, wow, look at this, who made this? He says, nothing, I knocked by mistake, I knocked it down. And this came, and a picture came out of it. He said, it's impossible. How could lines in such exact information form such a nice little painting come from knocking over an inkwell? So he says to him, I don't understand you. You just finished telling me, I got to say, Baba Mai said, about the world coming by itself. An inkwell can make a picture and the whole world happen by itself. And it's fascinating. As it's a simple argument like this, and for whatever reason, if you think conversation finished, is a creator. But yet there's still a whole school of people saying over the same dumb things that this king was saying till today. Why? Because the Eitzara never gets tired of this lie. He just has to find somebody who will buy into it. It doesn't stop. So we have to be smart enough at least to understand that when we approach right this, of course we have a munna that there's a creator. But you don't need a munna that 2 plus 2 is 4. How do you know 2 plus 2 is 4? Because 2 plus 2 is 4. You see, 2 plus 2 is 4. That's why. I believe it's 2 is 4. You don't say that, because that would be also misplaced the munna. We could understand something. The munna is misplaced. We could understand that the world has a creator. Now, the greatness of the creator and all the spheres and everything, the Torah teaches us that you need Torah. But this is plain knowledge that Avraham Avinu came out of a mite, and he saw a world, and he saw a world working in such harmony. He realized there must be a creator, and he was looking for him. They started looking for him. And when he started looking for him, Hashem revealed him in our life also. When we know we have a creator, we have to start looking for him. How? By learning Torah mitzvahs, and Hashem will help us find him. That's exactly how it works. We can't just say, okay, we know there's a creator and get on with life. Hashem wants us to find him. And then he finishes like this. It's evident to us that the things which come about without an intent is of an intender, an intelligence, none of them will display any trace of wisdom or ability, behold and see. That if orderly writing is legible like it would be with a pen, if a man brought before us orderly writing that which cannot be written without the use of a pen, he would say that the ink was spilled on the paper and the form of writing happened on its own, he would be quick to call him a liar in his face. He would feel certain that it could not have happened without an intelligent person's intent. How do you know it didn't happen? Because you know this doesn't happen impossible. So you see a world and somebody says there's no God, it's not even there. And so this, you don't have to be. Since it appears impossible for our eyes, for mere symbols, the alphabet, whose form is merely conventional, and how could one entertain the notion for something whose engineering is far more fine, whose formation is infinitely more fine, deep and beyond it for our comprehension, to say that without intent of an intender, without the wisdom of a wise and powerful being. And it finishes off. We have brought to establish the existence of a creator from all the aspects of his deeds. Should be enough for anyone who's intelligent to admit the truth, and is sufficient for the refutation of Kadmut. You know, Kadmut means those philosophers who claim that the world is a Kadmut, always existed, to disprove their claims. Okay, so this is, any other questions on this one? We'll move on. Yeah.
I had a question about the world, but so we don't have some created the world, but five failed in
how many years? 5,786. Tough Shin. I just want to know, there's a sefer that goes through every single phase and day of the whole world. It's not the, we have a Messiah that goes back. But another thing, and the closing he brings down, and Meshach Rabbeinu came to Pari, and he told him, he wrote down the whole. But we know how the world, how all the generations came. They were there then, and nobody refuted him. Everybody's looking to undermine Meshach Rabbeinu's emes. So he put things in the Torah that people could have argued. Noach existed. There was a flood. All the families that came from them, all the nations that came from them. Here, guys, nobody said, well, second, we're a million years old, and we have monkeys came around. Yeah? So there's a lot of things in the Torah that if you know how to learn, or this is not me, if you're not in the culture, you can see that. Logically, our Messiah goes back till Adam Rishon. So we're not born in a cave. A lot of times people come with arguments and say, maybe this and maybe that. Says, the Torah wasn't found in a cave. All the magicians that were there. Meshach Rabbeinu told his Ivri and where he comes from. And everybody knew the history of the world. And in with the Vayin themselves. How many times even were trying to disprove Meshach Rabbeinu in the Midbar? And nobody had a different history book of different things. So whatever it says there was tried and proven. We know today we have from Taylor, we have a moon in the Taylor. But in Meshach Rabbeinu's days, when he wrote down Noach and all the 10 generations of Avraham Avinu and all, everything is going on there. And everybody had a chance to say this is not true. The fact that was written, everybody accepted it. Said, this is all true.
That's interesting.
No, me neither. That does. You have to open the paper.
So my kid, they want to know, what was before the world?
Nothing. Our mind can't comprehend nothing. But there's nothing there. Only Eibishter. Only the Eibishter exists. Eibishter is at one point, I mean, not time, but Eibishter wanted the world. And that's how words came.
You can
say
the
Tayr. There's nothing there. Tayr, you can say the Tayr. Only Tayr existed, and the Shamas existed. You can say that.
But there was nothing. There was no Shamas.
No, the Neshama is part of Hashem. The Neshama in its source is a chelik of the Kamim Mal
Mamish. We were always there with Hashem.
Yeah. Anishamas. Yeah. Anishamas in its source. So the Eibishter wanted to have a world where to reveal his kaychas, and that's where he created the world. That's what we're told. Yeah.
So it's like just like when the kids want to know what's after 900 trillion. I'm like, when your brain gets to 900 trillion, you let me know. You know what I mean? it happens to be that Robertson, oh no, she's from New Square. What's her name?
Robertson Smith.
Smith. She said a very nice thing. Can I share it?
Yeah.
Her son was very upset that that all these Kadoshim were killed on my phone. Where? He was like 10 years old and he was crying and crying and screaming that and sad and thought and sad and sad. So she told him to take a cup and she said, pour. And it happens to be when he got to the tap, he said, stop. She goes, no, it started flowing all over. So she explained to him that our intelligence is the size of a cup. We don't have more than this. So Hashem gave us this amount. And if he poured more intelligence and he would understand,
or Hashem, I got cut off. It was
going to be some, something.
So what would happen? Let's say Shia came today, that the balance of the neshama having to do its tikkun in the world, and if let's say the Shia came today, that means that we all reached our tikkun.
Yeah.
Or we do it.
No, it's all not.
Hashem
ultimately gets his will. So, she isn't coming, and he knows everything's done. Yeah. Why you sound so surprised? 2,000 years is not enough?
I don't know.
There seems to be a lot of people that's not happy yet.
Yeah, but it's not an indefinite job. I met somebody when I was just a young guy and moved to the Midwest, and he was a businessman. He's into learning, and he told me he's not ready for Mashiach yet. He has to finish a few more Masechtos, and then Mashiach can come. Like, people get all caught up in their silliness, understand? If he played it on a tape and played it back to himself, he would say, oops, I didn't mean to say it that way. Hashem wants us, you see, that's his learning because he wants to get a certain shleimus. We have to be desired to, this whole shayuch of the ma'aseh is to do a mitzvah for the Eibishter wants. So the Eibishter knows anashamas, the Eibishter knows exactly what has to get done, and the Mashiach comes as soon as everything is done. Yeah.
I have a question. Why does Rabbi Bashan think that we have to be proven that Hashem is like this kind of crap?
Why do I think so? First of all,
there's a goal here, so I'm wondering what the goal is.
The goal is because it has two goals. First of all, this is part of Shalich Damaisa. It also shows you this is the second line of argument. The Sahara goes to undo it is faith. And I want to show that everything is in Torah. I don't know who's sitting here, number one, number two. And number three, every person from time to time gets the Yitzhahara coming. How could he come to the realization that there's Eibush? Or somebody asking that question. I shared with you, I met this young seminary girl, and she wasn't clear about all this stuff at all. If Rabbeinu Bachya puts it in Shaykh Lamaisa, one of the Shaykh Lamaisa can learn. So obviously, if this is not a problem for any specific person, you at least understand that when the Yitzhahara comes now, this form of saying the world is a Kadman or not, there's a God or not, is comes in different shapes and forms. And that's in the world of Betachon. In the world of Betachon, the foundation of Betachon is that nobody in the world can help me, nobody in the world can hurt me without the permission of Hashem. So this becomes very relevant, because if a person thinks that there is, of course, an Eibishter, but the Eibishter is, which actually it's actually the next one, not this one, but you can't talk about a moon. You have to first know that the Eibishter is the first and creates everything, and therefore nothing that exists besides him. And therefore, if you need any help, then you only turn to him. So this becomes very, very, very fundamental. If people are not, they see this is where it comes. Should you have the question, then the answer? No. We should have Amunah Pshuta, but Leider. And today, a lot of people have these questions. They won't tell you that, but they have the questions.
And also, isn't there like levels?
They don't have the questions. Yeah, and if they don't have the question, the children have the question.
In our life,
and we think if we're not gonna, just looking at the chinuch, how the chinuch in the story of Bereishis, we're told is there's Avodah Zarah, and we're told that Avraham Avinu was fighting Avodah Zarah in the kisa. We're told that there's people that fight against Hashem. Why are we telling them that? Why are we raise our kids in a very perfect world? Because the Yetzirah is internal, and somewhere along the line of the kid's life, he will face these questions, and you have to prepare him for those answers. And if you're not going to prepare for the answers, then A, there's going to be a failure there. And more important, there's a part of the person that never really never, let's say a person that ignores the question that you have to question. There's a part of him that doesn't really understand it. So there's a part of a vacant of this understanding. So that's why it's important to know it.
But isn't it also how we translate it in our day-to-day life? But this is more global. Hashem created the world. But aren't there, like you were saying, like levels of what we see?
Any existence, you print anything. But that's the next. That's the next one. That's one more question. Let's continue going. Yeah.
There's some quote we just said earlier. So I'm just looking at that. We said that the whole world was created. There's Hashem, and there was Neshama with Hashem and the Torah, right? And then the world was created. Hashem wanted a place for his name to be,
in a world that doesn't see Hashem to come to that the world the Hashem should come down the world and bring Hashem into the world. Yeah.
Bring Hashem to the world.
Now you're getting beyond this tree.
Every single time a person gets to the sign or even anything, and you're being much changed from mind by saying it's from Hashem, or you're doing something every single day. So that's pronouncing Hashem
exactly
as well. That's exactly the bucket.
Exactly. So
that's what Hashem wants.
Exactly. Yes. And so how the Yitzhak come and do it? In person, a little challenge, they came by a new name called Shrama. Now, I mean, this is a big problem. But what you just said is exactly the way you're supposed to know. And today, they can hide undo that. It sounds so beautiful and so clear. So the Yitzhak came up with a new name. He's going to call it Shrama. Now, Shrama is a... Shrama is not in the... You should call it in the same, but the word... It's not part of the way they interpret a person's difficulty is you look at me as if trauma is a gravity and it has to be there and you're trying to fit it into your life. Stop and say trauma doesn't exist.
Oh, because trauma doesn't exist.
Yeah, because why doesn't trauma exist? Because trauma is explaining a person why they're affected by their experience, and that's what acting to acting. Oh, where'd you go? So they sort of gives you a shift. It took a people a shift, introduced a new word, trauma versus trauma, and it sounded of Sabi Salze. And Mitamal is repeating it as if it's the lights are on, right? But it's not, because trauma means that something happened that should not have happened. And if it didn't happen, it'd be better off. Trauma means there's no purpose in all things. It's an outside interference into your life. That now you have to deal with the rest of your life because of that what happened. And there's no and how are you gonna do it? You have no case to do it. If you the same experience, you say no, there's an assignment, the neighbor is like it's hard, and they're giving me an assignment to overcome. There's a purpose here to bring the condition to the world, but I'm also different. It's a whole different conversation. So this is exactly a perfect example of how the Yisrael gives Chazal a slide in. And the crazy thing is he doesn't slide in, they've opened the doors and they'll take out the sphotum for him, but it's not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought trauma just means something shocking to your system.
So why is it called trauma? So it's shocking already. Every time you hear a new word, it means the word is supposed to bring out another thing.
It does make a person feel they have no kaya, but now that you're saying it, that is the message you get when you hear the word trauma. I can't overcome it.
Trauma is a philosophy. Trauma is an explanation. Trauma comes with the whole, the word trauma comes with the whole philosophy that's mamash, anti, and mun.
Well, but let's say somebody has an experience where every time they left their house, there was a dog that was running loose or whatever. So every time they open the door, they can say,
they have a fright.
The reason I'm nervous to go down the steps is because it's a dog. I am attaching, opening the door to the door. That's my trauma speaking, and I will go through the door anyway because Hashem will take care of me. It's using the word to name a situation.
Okay, yeah.
Attaching something that's in, like, it doesn't make sense here to the situation because I have a history of that situation.
Right. We're not arguing with you. I like the word trauma. It sounds good. It's a T and R. It has a good mouthfeel. I'm asking. But the sad truth is that trauma. But trauma, they don't do it that way. That's how they cut kids away from parents, and that's how they cut kids away from the Eibush there, because the parents are trauma, and it's a physical disease you have, and they're the medical scientists, and they figure out how to heal you, no?
Yeah.
It's all 101. This is not the...
talk a lot about generational
trauma. But once they finish there, they have to keep on... But the end all to the whole thing, is to take you away from the Eibush. That's the problem. That's like trauma. But if they take you from the Eibush, their goal is to take you from the Eibush. The word Nisayan will be the same thing. I have Nisayan, I have a fright. What is the trauma? I have a fright from dogs. I do. I went to a gas station to get the gas. I went in to pay, and a big German Shepherd mamish jumped on me. It didn't hit me, but mamish came at me. I don't know what to tell you, how come he didn't. And the pale since then, I don't like dogs. I don't like dogs. Is that a trauma? Is that a trauma? I'm frightened. I'm not frightened enough, nothing. But my point is, it's a fright. It's a scare. So I have a fear for something. It's a trauma. Something I got to fear. So I get over it. Also, you tell a guy get over your trauma. He tells, oh, you don't believe in trauma. Ah, you're in denial. You're in denial. You're not sharing my pain. Ah, what are you talking about? Not validating me. But I do like dogs. Don't like dogs. Why does that do with me? So nobody gets involved if they like cherry ice cream or chocolate ice cream. It's something they do like, don't like. They make this whole thing into a belief that's negated to our health, mental health. This is the mental. You want the mental health right here. I mean it very seriously. Sure. You want mental health? This is mental health.
Where about this when I needed it?
And there's so many times I sit with boys at night, on Friday night, and they always say, how come I wasn't taught this in yeshiva? And that's the reason I'm learning it here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's part of it. I stopped and... It's a part of the story, yeah. So let's go further because we're running out of time and I want to go to teach you do 2 and 3, which 2 and 3 works together. Once you have 2 and 3, the next attack is going to be a mitzvah. And you have, the next thing is, first it comes to attack the original creator, same page. And second, the attack is false gods.
Page eight.
When it gives up. You know, I want to say one more thing that I didn't say before about looking at the composite nature of our world. And we something we discussed in the shir many times. Everything, and everybody agrees to this, everybody. There's four, you say this, all physical objects are made up of four fundamental ingredients. Fire, air, water, and earth. And do you ever stop a second and think that fire and water never get along together? Okay. They don't.
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah. And air and earth are mamish two opposites. Air flies up and air is in the bottom. And they just took four opposites and put them into one thing and he creates a river with that. So it's not just a composite. It's not that. So who can put together any composite? You see, if you see a composite of things being put together, who put it together? You can't say it naturally got together because they push itself away. All these little pointers all comes to anybody who has a half a brain to conclude there must be a creator. And this creator is so big and so that's really, really, you want to really get excited about the greatness of the Abish. You start learning this and you start being pointed out things you never knew before. And you say, wow. And now then you find out we'll do this next year. Is that this creator came to us in Hasina and he says, I want you. How do you like that? I'll give you a job, the only you can do. And you're important. And the world can't be without you. The whole world's created for you. Mitamol. Oh, so I'm not just a mistake. And I'm not just somebody who got dropped off in this world because of that. And my life is not a mistake. And what I'm going through in life is not stam happenings. This is all part of a divine plan. You say the word divine, word. They use it a lot easy. Divine means forever. Divine means infinite. That's what divine means. So who doesn't want to be part of the divine plan? You'd rather be, you know, I always say, for many years, I looked at a lot of behemoths. I saw a lot of behemoths in my life. I'm talking four-legged ones. And chickens are everywhere. So I always just think, you know, you see behemoths outside. You see a behemoth outside and he's going eating. The lifespan of a behemoth is not too much. It's 5-7 years and it's gone. He gets born, it eats, it this, and then it goes. Again. What do you think a behemoth would rather want? To live that 7 lives and turn into a cow manure? Or you should wind up on the Shabbos table, a Yom Tov table? What do you think? Obviously. Oh, Shechita. Oh, wow. Yeah. Because if you look at the nature of the world, the whole world, they just has to get elevated, and the cow was created to get elevated in the Shabbos table. So you start seeing the world in a whole different thing, and then you see the sentences. And now let's go to the next one. So the first attack is on our moon about is Abish. The second attack is false gods, meaning he says, and he shows you how the Yitzhara never gives up, and the Yitzhara always continues trying to mess you up. So when he gives up trying making you doubt these matters, okay, so we agree there has to be a creator. Then I'll try to confuse you with the matters of associating Hashem with such beliefs as dual gods, three gods, the belief of Christians, naturalists, and beliefs of foolish worshippers of the stars, according to various views. Now, well, that means there are those who believe in the forces of stars and nature and what do they call these guys, astrologers. When it'll be clear to you that the creator is one and eternal, according to the introduction at the beginning of this book, what we said before, all of these doubts will leave you. So if you take these 2 and 3, what does that have to do with the Munda B'tachon? Because B'tachon means, I've said before, B'tachon means the realization that there is no existence other than the Eibishta. Everything, there's no other power besides the Eibishta. It's a story I said, I think it brings it out very, very well, the story. What does it mean that is a God and no one else? What does that really mean? So the story actually was the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe, Rebbe Yitzchak, in 1927, they arrested him. He was a young man then. He was in his 40s. He just take over Yosh Kerala in 1920. And the story is 100 years ago. Wow, look at this. My father lived in, not he was born after, but this story has had a big impact on the city. They arrested him. They wanted the members. They tortured him. They wanted to kill him. And the Baruch Hashem, he was saved, and they exiled him from the country. This all happened, and then he went to Poland, and from Poland he came to America in 1950. So in the time he was arrested, he was interrogated, and I got a chance to feel and interpret interrogations. Mean that nobody ever pointed a gun to me, but there was guns on the table, and there was different forms of trying to show that they have power, and they were trying to get information out of him about his network. He had yeshivas, and he had the Qadarim, and he had shuls, mikvahs, whatever he had over there. Going, a lot of going on there. And he wanted to know the people that he was names, because they wanted to arrest the most. Obviously, he wasn't telling any names. So the guy pulled out a gun, and he says to him, you know, this little toy made a lot of people change their mind. He threatened to kill him if he doesn't start talking. So he said to him, a person only gets afraid from your little toy if he has one world and two gods. A person who has two worlds and one God. So the next is that the guy got afraid, he put the gun away and never took it out again. That was it. So I heard this story, and I was amazed. It's one of the stories, Tzaddikim stories, that really show of Gevuras and Nefesh and overcoming. And the Soyan, even though you're being threatened by a gun, that was it. But as you're growing older, I heard an explanation which actually gave a lot of depth to it. And it's very, very prevalent to what we're talking about now. And that is, he said two things. He said, if you have one God, this is something anybody can use. And I went through a lot of times where the world looked like very much against me. This helped. The story helped me, actually. So he said like this. He was saying like this. There's two parts of why a person becomes afraid when he's going through an assignment. But if he's facing something which can hurt him. One of them is, if a guy's a gun's pointing in his face and he says, I'm going to kill you if you don't bow down to Avodah Zarah, and he gets shot, then he loses. If you only have one world and you get killed, you lose it all. You have nothing afterwards. If you have two worlds, you're not so afraid, because if you miss this world, you have another one to lose. You pull up to the next spot, and this is okay, it's not. So, but why is it, he said, if a person has one God, he's never afraid, and if a person has two gods, he is afraid. That was, right? Interesting, huh? And this is very important for this little piece. That's what he's aiding over with false gods. We establish a god, but there's a difference. There's a two and there's three. And what's why two? Why two? Because two means some people put together the people in life. The biggest question is why do good things happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? The famous question. Right? So there's a good god, the answer, and there's a bad god. And the good guy goes good stuff, and the bad guy goes bad stuff. And they have it all solved up. Now, the problem with that thing is, first, it's a lie. And second of all, is that makes a person very afraid, because if a person is serving one God and he's doing well, and mitzvah of bad things start happening to him, so the Yitzhak comes and says, okay, do you believe in a God? But now the bad guy is in charge, and if you don't start worshiping him, you're in big trouble. You better start talking, right? So, but a person realizes there is no two gods. There's no good God and bad God. There's only one God, one Eivishter. And everything comes from him. The Eivishter says, from me doesn't come anything bad. It comes down, it looks like it's bad, it's an Asoyan. It's a test, but it looks like to a person that is. So what does Eid know? Eid believes in one Eivishter, says that whatever I'm going through is all Eivishter, and my job is to do what Eivishter wants. And the same way I did it before, I do it now. I'm not frightened by something that's happening that's trying to pull me away from the belief in one Eivishter. That means everything is one Eivishter, and I'm not frightened from you. That's why if a person is able now, it's easy to say. Well, it's not said in a second. It's easy to say, but it's not. But the Yetzer Hara comes by and says, one second, but there's another power. But Harai, the guy is doing that. Harai, what is that? He's threatening you with something. Why is Hashem interfering? How come Hashem is letting it happen? Right? I was then this was one of my favorite subjects on learning. So this was a good preparation for me. But I remember being thrown into this. I was fighting for the African citizens, and I was thrown into the solitary confinement. I can't get out of there until I was going to listen and walk without African citizens, which I didn't want to do. And I was... It was a lot of questions shot at me, because why was this? How come Hashem is not helping me? Why is Hashem not helping me? How come? Maybe I should check whatever was going on. All the questions flying my head, and then it hit me. I started diving. It's not that Hashem knows where I am. Hashem is creating me there. How am I here? Hashem is creating me every single moment. How is this place here? Hashem is creating this place here every moment. I'm a chadav b'tuvim b'chotem asabrishes. So Hashem is creating me here. So it's not that Hashem knows where I am. Hashem is putting me here. Now the question is, why in the world? And the answer is, Hashem says, Ki minasa Hashem, I'm not ignoring you. I happen to want to see. I have to give you a test to see, or to show, and this is going with what you said before. Every Nisayan has the exact same element in there, where the Nisayan tries to prove, tries to push a person to admit or come to giving in, admitting that there's a place in the world where God doesn't exist. There's a place in the world where Torah mitzvahs can be done. And all these stories you hear about the Yidden going to Siberia or go to guest chambers, and this is really what's going on there. The Yid knew that this matzav was trying to say Hashem is not, and they said Hashem is here. But they said Shema Yisrael walking to the guest chambers, it wasn't because of wise guys. That was their job in life, and it was hard and it was painful, and the Hashem would pay him back, and Hashem would condemn and everything was going on. But this was the fact. Any challenge a person goes through, any challenge, and today Baruch Hashem there shouldn't be any challenge like this. But any challenge is a person goes through something, whether it be in chinuch, whether it be with the money, whatever it is. The challenge tries to say, in this situation, you can't be a yid the way you are. Here, you got to give in a little bit. You got to start talking. You got to give information. You can't do the Eibush to want you to do it. So if you believe in that's exactly it. The darkness is trying to say it exists, and Hashem can't permeate this darkness. And you have to say, no, I can't permeate darkness. I'm going to show what am I going to do. I'm not going to give in to the Yitzhara. I'm going to do what Eibush wants. And that's the purpose. And you'll see every time you do it, you get helped, and actually feel good about it. Because that's your purpose where you are. So I remember this helped me in that matzav, extreme matzav. I realized my job is not to think why Hashem is not interfering, why helping me. Hashem is putting me this matzav. My job is just to make a kabbalah that I'm not walking without a couple of ancestors. And you know something? After a few hours later, after I made that kabbalah, I got back my ancestors. You pass the test goes away. That's the cloud. So these two, just to finish up the class over here, one more minute. I just want to finish up into the next. If a person understands he has an Hashem, a person understands there's an Eibishter. And the Eibishter, but the B'tachon, not that there's an Eibishter, but there's nobody else. The only one he can trust is Hashem. He comes to the fourth one. Now, so a person is so empowered that he's going to serve the Eibishter. He doesn't give up. So now he starts throwing doubt whether you're avoid and say the mitzvah is needed or not. Whether you have to serve the Eibishter, because he can't get you. You have an Hashem, you want to say the mitzvah, you have a different Eibishter. You don't believe in anybody else. But now you start saying, well, it's not so necessary. Maybe this, you're avoid and say the mitzvah. So because say the mitzvah is where everything is at. The Eibishter, in a prayer, the Mama said, all this we're talking about now, but Hashem and Mun and B'tachon is to get you to want to do a mitzvah. That's the way for an avoid. So the next attack is, he sees that you're going with this. The next day he starts arguing with you. That you don't have the Torah mitzvah is not so important, and the mailer don't do it the way the Eibishter wants to do it. You have to do it, maybe you have to do it for this reason, that reason, and that's the mission next week. You can get into it.
Okay. Before everybody leaves and gets up, I want to say something, say a couple of things. First,